Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Friday, May 15th. My cousin said something to me recently that I haven't been able to stop thinking about. We were talking about career choices, and he said that first-generation immigrants almost never take risks. They pursue education and stability. Engineering, medicine, accounting, government jobs, the kind of careers where the paycheck is predictable and the path is clear. It made sense to me immediately, because I've seen it with my own family and in basically every immigrant family I know. But then he asked the follow-up question, what about their kids? Do the kids of immigrants, the ones who grew up with the safety net their parents built, take more risks? And if they do, does that actually put them in a better position? We're covering this today because the answer turns out to challenge one of the most popular stories Americans tell themselves about success. The myth of the self-made risk-taker, the person who put everything on a dream and won, usually leaves out the part where they could afford to lose. First-generation immigrants are, on average, among the most risk-averse populations in any economy. Research from Bonin et al. Found that first-generation immigrants have lower risk preferences than people born in the country they moved to, and those preferences don't equalize until the second generation. The reasons are obvious once you think about them. An immigrant who left everything behind to start over in a new country has no margin for error. There's no family nearby to bail you out, no inherited house to move back into, no professional network built over decades. Failure doesn't just mean a rough year, it can mean going back to where you started with almost nothing to show for it. So they optimize for certainty. They push their kids towards degrees with clear job outcomes. They save aggressively. They avoid debt. They take the stable job over the exciting one. This isn't a cultural deficiency. It's a rational response to having no floor beneath you. When the fall could be catastrophic, you don't jump. Their kids grow up in a totally different world, me being one of them. The second generation has that floor. The mortgage is paid or at least subsidized. There's food in the fridge, the parents have savings, college is expected and often funded, and if the kid tries something and it doesn't work, they can just move back home, regroup, and then try again. The floor their parents spend decades building becomes the launch pad their children use to take the risks the parents never could. Again, I think about this in my own family. My parents came here and did exactly what my cousin described. They pursued stability, they built a foundation, and they made it possible for me and my brother to consider career paths that would have been unthinkable for them. The risks I've taken in my career, changing industries, moving cities, leaving stable jobs, were only possible because I had a floor beneath me that my parents built by never taking those kinds of risks themselves. My cousin also said first-generation immigrants earn a lot more than native-born Americans. That's actually not quite right, and the real data is more interesting. First-generation immigrants, on average, earn less than native-born workers. They start at lower wages because their foreign credentials don't transfer. Their English may be limited, and their professional networks are thin. But their earnings grow faster than native-born workers with comparable education. The real payoff comes in the next generation. The Census Bureau found that second-generation immigrants, the children of people who came here, have higher rates of college completion than both their parents and native-born Americans with native-born parents. 38% of second-gen immigrants hold a bachelor's degree or higher, compared to 33% of third-generation plus Americans. An NBER study found that sons of immigrants have greater upward income mobility than sons of U.S.-born parents. And this pattern has held for over 100 years across completely different waves of immigration. The National Academies of Science found that the second-generation adults contribute the most of any generation to state and local finances. The first generation sacrifices, and the second generation surpasses everyone. The immigration patterns turn out to be a specific case of a much broader finding. The single strongest predictor of entrepreneurship isn't personality, intelligence, education, or some innate tolerance for risk. It's having wealthy parents. Economists Ross Levine and Yonah Rubinstein analyzed the shared traits of entrepreneurs and found that they tend to be male, white, better educated, and more likely to come from high-earning, two-parent families. University of Warwick professor Andrew Oswald put it plainly. Many researchers have replicated the finding that entrepreneurship is more about cash than dash. Genes probably matter, as in most things in life, but not much. The examples are everywhere once you look. Jeff Bezos' parents invested roughly $250,000 in Amazon when it was still an idea in a garage. Bill Gates' mother was on the board of United Way alongside the chairman of IBM, a connection that helped Microsoft land its first major deal. Gates' parents also provided financial backing when he built the company. Elon Musk, despite the mythology of the scrappy founder, came from a family wealthy enough that he could afford to drop out of Stanford and build a company without worrying about next month's rent. The mechanism isn't complicated. When your basic needs are met, it's easier to be creative. When you know you have a safety net, you're more willing to take risks. The National Bureau of Economic Research found that environmental factors, not genetic ones, influence risk-taking behavior, suggesting that risk tolerance is learned over time rather than hardwired. People who grew up in households one paycheck away from eviction learned to avoid risk because risk was dangerous. People who grew up with financial cushions learned that risk was survivable because for them, it was. Over 80% of funding for new businesses comes from personal savings and friends and family, according to the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor. The average cost to launch a startup is about $30,000. If you don't have access to that money through family or accumulated savings, the barrier to entry is enormous. The risk taker who quits their job to start a company is often someone who has 6 months of expenses covered by a spouse, a parent, or inheritance. The person who stays in the stable job isn't less brave. They just can't afford the fall. American culture loves the bootstrap narrative. The founder who started with nothing. The dropout who built an empire. The immigrant who arrived with $5 and became a millionaire. These stories are powerful, and some of them are true. But the pattern in the data is clear. The people who take the biggest risks are rarely the people who have the most to lose. They're the people who have the softest landing if things go wrong. This isn't an argument against risk-taking. Risk is essential to innovation, to economic growth, to building anything new. The argument is that access to risk is distributed unevenly, and the mythology around entrepreneurship obscures that distribution. When we celebrate the founder who risked everything, we're usually celebrating someone who risked less than it appeared because their family, their education, or their network would have caught them even if they fell. The person who actually risks everything, the first-generation immigrant who put their savings into a laundromat or a restaurant, rarely gets celebrated at all. They don't end up on magazine covers. They just quietly build the floor that makes the next generation's risks possible. The generational pattern is consistent across immigrant communities. Research on second-generation Americans found that risk tolerance in the parents' countries of origin had a positive and significant impact on the likelihood of the children becoming entrepreneurs. A one standard deviation increase in cultural risk tolerance increased the probability of entrepreneurship by 18%. The willingness to take risks is partly inherited culturally, but it's activated by economic security. You can have the disposition toward risk-taking and still not take risks if the consequences of failure are too severe. What unlocks it isn't courage, it's a floor. The Ukraine and Libya example from yesterday's nuclear episode are actually the same dynamic at a national level. Countries without security guarantees, a floor, don't take geopolitical risks. Countries with nuclear weapons, the ultimate floor, act with more confidence. The pattern scales from individuals to families to nations. The willingness to take risks is almost always a function of what happens if the risk doesn't pay off. So if this comes up in conversation, here's how to think about it. First-generation immigrants are among the most risk-averse people in any economy because they have no safety net. Their children, raised with the stability their parents built, are freer to take risks, and the research shows that they do. But the pattern isn't unique to immigrants. The strongest predictor of entrepreneurship is parental wealth. Over 80% of startup funding comes from personal savings and family money. Risk tolerance is learned, not genetic, and it's activated by financial security. The people we celebrate as bold risk takers usually had the softest landings even if they failed. The people who actually risked the most, the immigrants who put their savings into a small business with no backup plan, rarely get the credit. They just built the floor. Their kids got to jump. Have a good weekend. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.